Hi folks. High noon. Mountain time. What's happening? So let's all just do a quick nest meditation here. So if you're not multitasking, I'm asking you to just be still. Put your feet on the ground or sit cross-legged, whatever works for you. And you're just going to check in with your number, emotion, sensation, thought. Where are you at? See if you can connect to that part of you that's activated in this moment. It could be just a 2, a 3, or above a 5, but see if you can sense into where that lives in your body right now in this moment. Where is that spot? And then I like to get really specific. Okay, it's kind of round, it's the size of a softball, a golf ball, a marble. It's not quite round, it's kind of like an amoeba. Is it three-dimensional? Can I sense and feel into it three-dimensionally? Does it have edges? And if so, what are they like? Where does it start and stop? And is it radiating? Is it collapsing inward? Is it pulsing like a heartbeat? Is it still? Is it numb? Is it black, white, red, purple? I go really deep inside to find out what that spot in me is. So as you're just arriving on the call, we're just checking in with our body, doing a quick nest meditation. And we're on the sensation right now, trying to find the most activated part of our body, wherever that is. Could be just a little tension in your neck even, but you want to actually go into it. When I used to sit and meditate on these long, month-long retreats for 9 hours a day, it was amazing because you could get so still after so many days. You know, a couple weeks in, you can sense and feel into every part of your body to the point where you can feel into the muscle fibers and tendons and ligaments and bone and differentiate. It's really wild. So stillness allows us to be more aware of ourselves. Pretty amazing. Okay, anything else you notice? All right, and if you had a headline, right, I like to sum it up for my partner or for a close friend. If I summed up my nest into a sentence, I am feeling grateful. I am feeling a lot of tension and frustration right now. I'm making up stories about this call. You know, whatever it is, right? Just, I'm gonna, if you wanna stay muted, you can do that, but I'm gonna unmute everybody. And I want you to just speak into your computer, and if you don't need, you know, want to, you don't have to play the game, but I'm going to do that now. So if you're multitasking, you'll want to be quiet so we can't hear you. All right. So everybody's unmuted. So just speak your sentence. Just speak it out loud.
Feeling frustrated and agitated.
Nice. Frustrated and agitated. Got it. Who's next? other brave ones want to just shout out their sentence? Okay, you're all getting muted. Fine, you don't want to play the game. I'm muting you. Nice. Okay, thanks for that volunteer. I think that's probably Kevin or someone. So I want to just dive it right in here and get right to it with your questions. Sometimes on these calls, I'm going to break down a distinction or I'm going to teach something for 10 or 15 minutes, and sometimes I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to go right to your questions, and through the questions, out will come some distinction that we need to make or get clear on something, like we did with the sharing impact thing recently. So ideally, you can ask your question here. You can certainly type it, but I'd prefer you just raise your hand with the little button there. And I'm waiting on you. This is your opportunity to get me and get some laser coaching here. So let's get into it. If for some reason you're not, okay, there we go. All right, we got one. Jennifer, go ahead.
Hi.
Hey.
Okay, so the question isn't completely clearly formulated, but I know in the last course we didn't get into intimacy in the form of physical intimacy and talking about sex and all that, but
yep.
It is coming up for me in terms of that piece in a long-term relationship. And I can see all of the pieces that we've been learning about and working with and how, you know, if you feel a connection, then that may be a very natural expression of that. But how to bring that into this whole picture. And one thing I remember from the conversation about the 10 agreements with Ellen, there was like a comment at some point about, there was something said to that effect of that piece of the sexual piece of relationship, and that it continues to evolve as well. It's a part of knowing someone. And
yeah.
I remember her just saying like, I hope so. Like, I hope it keeps continuing. You know, and it's that kind of feeling, like to keep that sense of wonder and exploration. And I'm not necessarily against a wall against it, but it's a very curious piece to me about keeping that alive in the container of a very long-term relationship. So I guess I'm curious about some tools or, you know, how it can thread back to the other things, or if there's some specifics around that.
Yeah. And remind us how long you've been in a, are you specifically talking kind of theoretical or are you talking about your actual relationship?
Okay, so for me, it's a little of both. I mean, theoretical, because in my past long relationships, that piece does seem to both taper off, and then it seems like it doesn't get spoken about. And I know that's part of the issue. It's like it just becomes sort of rote or it doesn't really happen. I've been seeing someone now about a year and a half, so that's not super long term, but I'm already noticing how, you know, he's actually quite a bit younger than I am, and he admits, like, I want it more, and that's great, but how, you know, finding the balance and navigating that together without shutting down, or, you know, all the stuff that comes up around rejection and control, and, you know, and then for me, just giving in even if I don't want to, that type of stuff, because I want to be genuine in that expression, so.
Yeah, totally. Nice. Thanks, Jennifer. This is a big one. I mean, this could be a whole conversation right here for way more than an hour even. And, you know, I can certainly just share what I notice, especially in my own marriage and also working with couples for years now, what kind of some of the themes are. It seems like to me that there's really two kinds of sexuality in a marriage or a long-term relationship. One is the rote kind that you spoke of that I'd say 95% of the people fall into. And that's mostly because they don't know that there's another way, or they go into their habits and patterns, and sex becomes kind of a thing that you just do to please your partner or please yourself. And it's kind of this act that's devoid of intimacy and a true sense of heart connection and a deepening. It's just I'm getting my rocks off because this is a basic need of mine, right? I'm here to reproduce. I'm kind of an animal. And for us guys, it can be more like this. Hey, well, I just need to have sex. That's just like a part of my biology. I just have to have sex. And so I have to jerk off to porn, or I have to, you know, and they guys will, in this stage, will kind of justify why they need regular sex. But, and for women, it's definitely different. And for conscious, more guys that are a little more conscious, it's different also. It's more, now we move into the next place of it being this totally confronting, deeply vulnerable, terrifying crucible where we meet ourselves and the deeper layers of who we are and our insecurities and everything else. So that's kind of like, and in that couple, those couples are willing to name that, own that, take responsibility for that, talk openly about it, and work on it through workshops, sex therapy, reading, experimentation, going slow, going fast, doing a lot of different things to find each other through the dance of sexuality. And so those are kind of the two basic camps, right? And again, this very small percentage of people is in the latter camp. And so the challenges, I think, are many, because in a long-term relationship, as after the fireworks wear off, most people tend to think it's because of my partner. If they're other blamers, if they're self-blamers, they think it's because I'm not attractive or there's something wrong with me, that we're not having sex. And people lose the flame and lose the luster and lose their kind of mojo around sex. And that's really common after the honeymoon period. And especially after children, it can kind of come and go. And we all look around at couples with couple kids or something. We think, oh, well, they're clearly having sex. They had kids. but the fact is, most people aren't having sex after kids. And if they are, it's the former kind that we talked about. It's this very rote kind of business exchange. I'll get you off, you get me off, and we're cool. And that actually does work for some people. It doesn't work for me and my partner, because it's just, I have to deny so many other parts of myself to have that kind of sexuality. You know, I have to just kind of put those aside. And I've done that, and off and on, and experimented, and as has my partner, I'm sure. But again, it just doesn't feel as nourishing and satiating and just yummy and, you know, all that and connecting. So does that kind of speak to sort of broad strokes a little bit?
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think the thing is, so if there is that desire for a more conscious connection, and even if it is, you know, quick or even taking care of, you know, an energy in a moment. I think there's a quality sometimes that starts to feel a little contrived around it, even if it's saying, oh, we want to experiment or we want to do this, you make the time. And I guess, I don't know, there's a piece that he's mentioning around spontaneity and seeming like all of a sudden it feels like there has to be rules. And I went, oh. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to look at that for myself.
Right, totally.
What I need to feel safe. But I'm also wondering, like, are there really rules? Or is it just because we're trying some things and we almost need some parameters? I'm not sure. So
Yeah, I think just let me comment on the rules thing. That can be how it can usually feel to one partner. If someone's, they feel like their spontaneity is going to get stifled as soon as you articulate some more subtle needs.
Yes, and, like if I want a certain thing.
Or if you want to slow down, or hey, I need you to actually not touch me there, or you need to like, wait, hold on a second kind of thing. That can feel stifling to the other partner. But again, if we're attuned to each other and we're really tracking each other, none of that is threatening.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, I mean, it usually in the beginning does awaken our insecurities, mm-hmm. but that can be moved through with regular leaning in towards those scary places and kind of bumping up against each other and finding each other and finding the language and the pacing and everything. And there's a real, it becomes a real dance and a real art of finding each other off again, on again over the years. And I don't think there's any problem with that. I've stopped believing, basically from my own experience with self and other people, that books or anything that says you can be sexually satisfied all the time for years on end. I tend to think it's just like anything, as we've talked about in the polarities of this course or the last course, is that sometimes things are hot and sometimes things are not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the natural life cycle of a relationship, especially over many years. And if we can relax into that and not make any of that wrong or a problem, that can actually help us find our sexuality in a more conscious, gentle way without rules or without like shoulds going on, right? Because we tend to think we should be having sex. Like, you know, there's blogs out there that are like, a healthy relationship is sex 3 times a week for years. You know, that's a healthy marriage. And other people defining for us what a healthy sexuality is. So we have to be on ourselves and know the difference between when am I scared and avoiding and when am I at my edge and I just need to slow down and take a break or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so hopefully that helps. And
definitely.
Yeah, and if I have a partner who's saying, oh, it doesn't feel spontaneous and rules, it's like, yeah, I hear you. You know, validate that feeling, get their world around it, and continue to be a champion for my needs and mm-hmm. the subtle sensitivities that I have.
Okay. I think with him, some of it's, and he said this, it's, you know, it's wrapped up in some masculine identity. I think that's where he gets some of that identification. And so it's just...
Totally.
It's pushing that to an edge, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and most men are trained nowadays through pornography, and it's this kind of studly, like, I'm fucking you or something, and you're just this, like, passive participant just letting me mm-hmm. do that to you. You know, it's just, like, ridiculously narrow. I mean, that's mm-hmm. one, sure, that's one kind of sexuality. mm-hmm. But anyway, we have that. We have the training around how we masturbated as a kid and on and on. And if men really want to go deep with their sexuality, it's a confronting path. They have to undo and unwind a lot of conditioning and societal messages and masculine just bullshit. And women do too, but, you know, I'm just talking mm-hmm. about men mm-hmm. right now.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay. Cool, Jennifer.
On a final note, I just want to share that today's my birthday, so this is an awesome gift to be here.
Oh, right on. Wow. Yeah. I celebrate your birthday. Wow, thanks to your mom mm-hmm. for bringing you in.
Yeah.
And your dad for helping that process along, of course. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, next question. Who's got another one? That was a good one. So it can be obviously a tangential question off that or just your own completely random question about what's cooking in your relationship, or it could be theoretical, it could be directly your fight you got in yesterday, whatever. So if you have a question and you're just trying to be polite, I wouldn't worry about that. Let's let other people take care of themselves if you have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Just come forward with it. Tick, tock, tick, tock. All right, Kev. Okay, man, go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, Jason. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. Well, my leading nest was, frustrated and agitated. So let me follow up with a question and a situation on that. And that was, this has been a real shit week of business issues and just stuff I didn't even expect. You just had stuff happen that I didn't expect and really put me in a bad place. So I reach out to my partner to try to say, hey, here's what's going on with me. I'm trying to kind of regroup. And then I've got my partner piling on, questioning. I told you so. I told you so. I lost it. I absolutely lost it. And just said, if you don't take any risk, if you're not out there doing what I'm doing, trying to make some things happen, then, get off my back. And that was probably the mild part of it, but I just lost it. Like, and I caught myself with these expectations around wanting in this, the reality versus the fantasy of wanting your partner to have your back and say, hey, I know it sucks. I know you'll work through it. I know this, but I just lost it. And it's created such a huge, friction on top of already friction. So it's kind of like this compiling effect. And so I'm really struggling with how to try to, I don't want to rush in and just say, hey, I tried to not just rush in and do that. Hey, I'm sorry about that. I basically said, hey, I was triggered. I lost my, I might've taken it out on you, really having a bad day. I had some expectations around how you were going to react. And I'm still getting today this, cold shoulder, the whole thing that I hurt her feelings, and it's kind of like, okay, we just need some time apart to cool off on this. So I'm trying to figure out how do I, I don't feel like I was wrong, but it's like, geez, I have an expectation of expecting some type of support when you're from your partner when you're going through that. So I know that's more of a comment and just trying to look for some clarity of maybe an approach to trying to rebound from that.
Yeah, okay, cool. So let's there's a couple layers there, I think, for you, Kevin. One is clearly that's a pretty common dynamic and frustrating for sure to want and have had a hard day or an intense week and have really you're just wanting someone to kind of hold you through that and support you, right?
Yeah.
So it seems reasonable, right? And sometimes, I like that you caught yourself with the expectation. So, my first question is it an expectation or is it a preference for you? If you're honest.
Totally. Honest, it's an expectation.
Okay. And does your partner know this? And are you educating them about this?
I believe I have been. I think I have said, in the past situations of, we can challenge each other, we want to push each other, but there's certain times when you're there to really kind of help support the person when they're looking for you to support them, and you got to kind of know the circumstances and know your partner and say, it's kind of like I call it piling on when somebody's already down. It's kind of like, that doesn't help them, doesn't make you feel real good about yourself or what your partner brings to the relationship.
Okay. So if you're going to make it an expectation, you're going to have a little steeper path on this one for yourself. You're just creating a harder path. Just going to put that out there.
Okay.
I do think it's a reasonable expectation that, hey, I just want to feel heard and supported. And the problem with the creating an expectation around that is our partner is unreliable and they can't show up for us 100% of the time when we expect them to. It's impossible. So, some of the time is fine, but she's got her own stuff going on or whatever's happening, right? And
right.
So she's a human being. And so it, I just think it's better to create preferences around things like this one, to like, look, I have a preference that you show up for me here, and I don't need you to, right? And I really don't need you to. At the end of the day, because if I'm trusting a bigger part of the relationship that she's there for me, let's say more than 50% of the time, then it's not really that big of a deal in the big picture. If I was in a relationship where she kind of wasn't there for me, but maybe just 10% of the time, that would be, that wouldn't work for me personally.
Mm,
right.
Okay.
But if most of the time she's there for me, it's like, okay, she's allowed to like screw up sometimes and just not be there or totally judge you or just be in her own shit about it or whatever. Right.
Right.
So the next layer down is the reason that's helpful is because when we have a preference, now you can get to the issue it's triggering on your side. So what is it triggering?
What is it triggering? It's triggering, you know, you're triggering just that aspect of wanting to be, like you said, held, supported, heard, you know, hey, you know, things are out of your control.
But what does it trigger in you when you're not feeling held, supported, and like someone has your back?
Well, then you just feel like you're on your own. I mean, you're just...
So let's use I statements so I know you're talking about you. So yeah. So I feel what?
I would feel, you know, I'm on my own. I feel, you know, I got to take this on myself versus I, you know, would like the support of...
Yeah, let's not go into the verses. Let's just stay with the kind of... We want to go right into the wound.
Okay.
Because this is the opportunity you're missing here in this fight, is she's going to behave that way so long as you don't address your shit that's getting triggered.
Okay.
Right? That's how this stuff works. It's really weird.
Sure.
But it just works that way. So you got to dig deep on, okay, what is this triggering? Like when I feel alone, that's the thing I've gotten the most from you right now. I feel alone. Okay, what else? Do you feel angry,
hurt.
Sad, hurt? Okay.
Hurt, feel kind of taken advantage of, you know, just you know, from the business transaction. So feel taken advantage of, feel, you know, hurt. You feel pissed off. You feel
you're going back into you again.
Sorry, I feel, you know, agitated. I feel angry. You know that, you know, I had let a situation, you know, turn against me. So, you know, that's how I felt about it.
And you're talking about the business example?
Yeah, the business example.
So there's two, hold on, there's two layers going on here for you. One is a business transaction that didn't go well, right? And then the other is how your wife is it?
Girlfriend.
Girlfriend. How your girlfriend supported you.
Right.
Right? Okay, so this is a compounded deal here. You've got all the stuff that just got triggered in your business. And then you got this, how you wanted to share it all, and you got kind of like, whatever, treated a certain way, and now you're in your stuff even more.
Right.
And you feel even more alone, right? So that's, yeah, okay, so what are the benefits to feeling alone, betrayed, outcast, and like no one's there for you? How does that help you?
Yeah, the benefits are to look for a solution, to look to see there are alternatives. And another benefit for me is to know I can soothe myself. I can you know, kind of regroup and I'll be okay. I mean, I don't.
Can you in this example? I get that you can on the big picture, but in this example, are you soothing yourself? Are you taking care of yourself? Are you showing up for yourself?
It's taken me about a day or so to do that, to get to that place.
Okay, so that's not bad. A day is pretty fast turnaround time. So you're getting there. And now the one thing I heard earlier is that, oh, we just have to take space and separate and it'll just kind of like, hopefully this will blow over. What can you actually do? And, you know, we're just scratching the surface here, but what could you actually do with your girlfriend in a proactive way to close the loop here and to just move through this faster?
Go back to her and get her story of it, get her side of it. Say, I understand. I heard your feelings. I understand. You know, I was triggered in what was happening with me, and I heard you say these things. And I took it out on you. So I understand that you have wounds and you're hurt by how I reacted, and I was looking for you to act a certain way, and that was an expectation I put on you that was probably unreasonable.
Okay. And anything else?
And what do we need to do to clear it? What do we, you know, are you okay with that, or how do we need to clear to say, you know, I'll work to not take it out on you any further, and you know, and try to look at my view of it being more of a preference than a expectation.
Okay, nice. Okay, so you guys can feel, if you're feeling into Kevin here, you can kind of feel his I don't know if it's tenacity or eagerness to like get back in connection, right? You can kind of feel that. And it feels for me what's missing for me right now is any kind of vulnerability. It feels like a business transaction. Like I'm talking to a guy that kind of wants to just like, hey, what do we need to do to kind of get through this and just get over this, right? And I wonder how much you as Kevin allow yourself to just soften here and actually go into feeling alone and like, wow, this actually triggers me quite a bit. And then if we go into your past, my guess is there were times where you felt the same way. Right? Is that true?
True. Absolutely.
Okay. And so this interaction with your girlfriend is triggering old stuff for you. And probably the business transaction where you feel whatever, betrayed or rejected or whatever it was, same thing. You know, this shit's just going to keep happening to you until you get a deeper slice of like facing it and meeting it head on, feeling it, and being vulnerable with the whole thing. And so that's just the part that's missing for me with you. And if I was your girlfriend dating you, I would want, like, where's this guy's softness? Where's his heart? Where's the tenderness around his wound? Not around trying to care for me, but around him feeling his own shit here, his own stuff. Do you let yourself go there?
Well, I do. It takes me a little while to get there, though. Because I feel judged when I go there.
Yeah, exactly. So you have evidence and then reasons why you don't go there. So that's another layer for you to work through. Because I guarantee you, man, that remember the like quickest way to resolve any conflict really is for the most mature person to go vulnerable immediately. The whoever's fastest at going vulnerable is going to help dissolve the whole thing quickly. The person that's kind of self-righteous and like pointing fingers or like, no, this is what happened. That's just going to keep it going.
Right. That's great insight, and I think what I'm hearing you say is kind of looking at two aspects of it. You know, the event obviously has some stuff around that to dig into, and then also what it's triggered to me and how I took that on and reacted. You know, within the relationship. So I'm here. Yeah, I'm seeing a little bit differently from your insight, and trying to deal with both of them is some things to dig into.
Okay. Cool. Great. Let's stop there. And now you have a little more to maybe chew on. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Okay. Cool. Good to chat with you, Kevin. Nicole, you're in listen only mode. Even though I entered my audio pin when I talk, you guys can't hear me. Let me try to unmute you. Try it now. Nicole, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay.
Cool. You got something?
So, yeah, I do. I have a question about clearing resentment.
Okay.
I noticed that even in relationship when somebody has said sorry for something, that the impact of the sorry isn't done in a way where I feel like they get it. And I've even showed the video on like why I'm sorry doesn't work to my partner. and he's like, yeah, that's good information. But so there's a part of me that wonders if it's that he's not saying sorry in the way that I'm feeling it. But then there's this other part of me that feels like when he does something that I feel resentful for, immediately my brain kind of goes into this all the other times in which like my cup is perpetually full of resentment.
Uh-huh.
And the idea of going through and clearing each one, you know, by through the method that was learned in with you, where I'm gonna like look at my trigger and reparent myself. There's so many of them that I'm not addressing any of them because I just get overwhelmed and I'm like, there's too freaking many to even deal with. And is this me carrying resentment and not being able to forgive, or is it that he's not really dropping in and like getting the impact of how he hurt me?
It's probably both. Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I'm sure there's people on this call that can relate to, like, oh, the pile, right? There's like, oh, there's so many, I just get overwhelmed, I don't want to deal. But I would guess it's both. Like, he's probably, if he were honest and, you know, he was on this call even, and I, like, dude, I was like, come on, calling him out a little bit, he'd probably be like, okay, yeah, that's probably true. I don't totally, like, drop in and really get the impact and totally see her. Because we can't really get and see someone to the degree to which we can get and see ourselves. So a person even can learn the intellectual conceptual skills, for example, and not embody them because they haven't gone there in themselves. So I'm not saying that's that guy, your guy here, but it could be. So that's, you know, he's got probably work to do. And you are sensitive, like most of us, to the nuances there and subtleties of someone really cleaning up something and repairing an injury, right? And it's less about...
And he keeps doing the thing that I keep saying, this is hurting me, and he says sorry, but then he does it again.
Yeah, and then you keep hanging in there.
Right.
Right, so we have to keep looking at your... how you're complicit in this, how you're, like, participating in it. You know, when someone continues to hurt me, I mean, how many times do I want to go to the playground where the bully is just going to beat me up again?
Okay, well, today's insight was that I noticed that when I have a boundary and I say, okay, I'm leaving the relationship now because this isn't working for me any longer, and then I get out of the relationship, after a couple of months, I start forgetting the bad parts of the relationship and why I wanted out, and I get back in it. And then I get back in it, which is where I'm at now, and I'm like, oh, this fucking sucks. I want back out of this because the same thing is happening again. Now I remember. And this is loops, like, for 2.5 years now. And I'm back in that place where I'm like, you know, this isn't going to work unless, like, we really drop in and, like, I really want to understand why you keep doing the things you keep doing, and I really want you to understand the impact of me. And when I share those things, he backs off, and he's like, I don't like it when you tell me that you don't like what I'm doing. But he's like, you know, even though he admits what he's doing isn't right, he doesn't want me to call him out on it.
Yeah.
So,
okay. All right.
Yeah,
well, you're... It's, yeah. On one level, yes. On another level, no. There's an issue that you haven't been able to resolve in you that has you come back for more so that you can resolve it. And my guess is it has something to do with you valuing yourself enough to hold a boundary in such a way that has you feel empowered and really solid in yourself and not flinching when the relationship starts to sound good again or whatever. You continue to burn through any fear of being alone, any fear of abandonment, any fear of, like, not being loved, and just continue to stand tall and not get seduced out of that by whatever, what appears to be a nice day or some pleasant moment or some sexy moment. You know, you clearly have something to learn here, and there's an opportunity you're not totally getting yet.
Right.
So it's like, it's back to...
Even when we break up, he's still, like, doesn't matter how big of a boundary I set, he's still there waiting, and I interpret that as, wow, this man really loves you, you should...
See, he's smart. Like, his unconscious self knows that you're not strong enough yet.
I don't even think it's that, because I think we're just totally mirroring each other. I think he's very similar to me, and... wants love and is willing to sacrifice.
Yeah, maybe. And his unconscious self is not quite, how would I put it? I just noticed how quickly you moved past that, what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what happens there for you?
Yeah, when I move past what you said?
Yeah. Like, if you seem to have it figured out, and if you had it figured out, it wouldn't be happening.
Good point, Nathan.
Right?
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is where you have
see him as being manipulative consciously. Anything he might be doing is subconscious. I get that.
It's unconscious to unconscious here. You guys are talking unconscious to unconscious. And because you both have unconscious parts that aren't in the light yet, you'll keep going back and forth, like you said, mirroring each other. But once one person wakes up out of the trance, the other person has a shift. But one, you know, it takes the more aware or motivated person to just have the shift and say, okay, I'm actually going to be done. And the moment you do, his unconscious will get it. But because you haven't done it in a full and complete way, his unconscious is still knows that you're not strong enough yet.
Right.
So he hangs around.
Okay.
He waits around.
Right.
And he calls it love.
Really.
He calls it love. But it's actually probably more fear than love. Okay.
You have a do-over. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, again, your opportunity to get strong here.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, so I'd be, yep, you got it, Nicole. Yeah, so for everybody here, appears to be how it is most of the time, is we will get the lesson the moment we will get it in our bones and our cells, and the pattern is like, the pattern shifts, and the other person gets it in a way that they've never gotten before. So, quick story. Guy is beat up by his brother in his childhood for years. It terrorized his older brother, literally beating him up in a very abusive home. And for years on end, they didn't have a mom. It was just living with the dad. Dad was also abusive. The little boy, who's now, like, let's say he was 6 years old at the time, who's beat up basically since he was an infant. When he's 6 years old, he finally, and his brother's like 10 or something, he finally makes a decision one night that he's not going to let his brother come in the bedroom and beat him up anymore. And before that, he wasn't ready. He was too scared. And the moment he did, he had a baseball bat sitting in his bed, waiting for him, and ready to completely convinced that I will kill my brother, and I'm not going to ever let him touch me like this again. That night, his brother puts his hand on the doorknob, turns, so the boy sees the doorknob turning, got the baseball bat in his hand, and then the doorknob turns back to being the way it was, and the brother, he can see the shadow underneath the door, and he walks away. His brother never touched him again. Why? Why is that? Why is that? Is that just some random synchronicity? No. It's because the younger brother got so crystal clear in himself that he said, never again, and I will do anything I can to protect myself, including kill my brother. It's felt. This shit is quantum physics stuff. Brother never touches him again. That is amazing to me. So it's the same thing in an intimate relationship, but on a much less terrorizing scale for most of us. Okay. Nora's got a question here. I'm guessing you don't want to raise your hand. So she's saying, you mentioned unconscious parts of the other person. How do you help them bring out their unconscious parts? Yes. And she's saying, I'm working on bringing out my own. Should I just worry about myself first? Yes. Don't worry about it. You're already inviting your partner to bring out their unconscious self all the time, every day, just by being your neurotic self, because you're triggering them. But most people prefer not to deal with their unconscious, so they defend and deny and blame and do whatever they need to do. So, you know, you're doing it all the time. You're doing everything you can by being yourself. You don't need to add more on. And remember, the only time a person can get clear and start to really get out of their unconscious lower self is when they, and they alone, make a choice to wake up one day and say, I'm going to work on this. I don't like this part of me. Okay. Nice. Any other questions? Got about 15 minutes here, guys. This is great. Yeah, you're welcome, Nora. She's saying thanks. Cool. Kevin, you have your hand up. Is that another question, or did you forget to put it down, or just let me know? Mm-hmm. Becky. Oh. Hey. Hey.
So I have a question and a comment. The comment first is, I had a really interesting conversation with a friend last night, and I got really clear on how much I was projecting onto my son.
Okay.
About how I want him to be, and so it really made me focus on myself.
Yeah.
And how it was just illuminating.
Nice.
I was like, wait, I want that in me. I'm not that in me. And it was like, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah, so that was just really good. And it kind of dovetails with your baseball story, because I was like, well, once he feels that, because I think he feels me like climbing all over him, which
yep.
I'm not, but it's such an ingrained pattern. I'm sure energetically he's still feeling that way.
Yep.
Then I imagine and hope that that's going to give him space to do what he needs to do from his inside instead of feeling the pressure from me.
Yeah.
That's the insight. So that's kind of cool. And it was also interesting to me because I listened to the other video that you posted on our page. And there was this one spot where you were talking about holding war, you know, and rape in the same moment as, you know, love and connection. And so I was thinking about my son. He's pretty much what I would consider in the danger zone. He's not only doing the stuff dabs. I don't know if people know what that is, but anyhow, he's doing that. And he's also doing pharmaceuticals. And there was a reference that you made recently to, you know, if you don't get your own shit together, then like the man, right, is whatever.
Yeah.
Society is going to pick up the slack there.
Yep.
So hopefully that's not going to happen. But my question to you is, if you were going to say to somebody, hey, what the fuck are you doing? You know, kind of a slap in the face.
Sure.
What's that language? And I can't say it to him yet, because right now I know I will have no impact. I can't say it to him until he feels my complete acceptance of him. And my complete love for him and the space. Because right now, again, he's feeling me all over him.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're getting
that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just wondering what the words are.
Yeah. Well, I'm really appreciating you and the way you're mothering right now. Because if I'm your son and I was on this call, I'd feel pretty, even let's say I pretend I hate you, deep down inside, I feel appreciation probably.
How do you feel that? What are you picking up on?
Because you care. You're like, I want to do this differently. Right? You want to do your pattern differently.
Yeah.
That's super inspiring. You know, how many parents want to do that? Not many.
Well, I want to just share one thing then, because I want to share what I'm going to tell him, which
okay.
I think is really cool.
Okay.
What I want to share with him is, hey, you know, we had this conversation before, and yes, it's true, I did the best I could, you know, and I gave it everything I had, and I realized that wasn't enough for you. Like, I just want to really acknowledge that for him.
Okay. That hits a tender spot in you.
Yeah, because it wasn't enough for him.
In your mind. See, that's...
I think it's his.
And,
I think it's
okay.
His, but I'll
fine. Okay, and you're buying into his... It's
yes.
It's always enough.
Oh, yeah, it's always enough. Yeah.
He got what he needed. Okay.
I'm sorry.
He got what he needed, and you got to absolve yourself and burn down the guilt or any shame or whatever you feel. And because what happens when parents feel guilt and shame is they try to not feel that way by managing their kids, overcompensating, for example.
Yeah.
Right, enabling, for example.
Yeah.
So your story you're telling yourself is inaccurate right now. Your story is buying into his story, which is you didn't do enough for me. If that's how he, if he wants to just run his story and blame you up and down, let him. You've got to trust that you delivered, and with your neurosis and your wisdom, you delivered the goods.
Yeah.
You know? At one point, I had that view of my mom. I hated her. She fucked everything up. She was a nightmare. Blah, blah, blah. And the more and more I grow, the more I see how brilliant her issues helped me.
Yeah.
You know, her inadequacies, the places where she couldn't show up for me, all that helped me.
Right.
Right? We've already talked about how I wouldn't even be on this call talking about relationship if she would have been like relationship champion.
Right.
You know, it wouldn't have happened. So I'm grateful. So your son's going to take his own time to do that. He may die on his deathbed and never be grateful for you. That's his shit.
Yeah, I get that, and I feel like I'm burning through the guilt and the shame. Like, I feel that, but I also feel like if I don't play into this, I guess this is like the last piece of the story that he's telling that I want to play into, which it wasn't enough. Like, I acknowledged that for him, and then I feel like my new story is, you know what? You've got what it takes, and this is your responsibility, and so I'm here if you need me.
Okay, I like that, but if you're still triggered by it wasn't enough, even 5%, that's going to trip you up. So I would post that. Is that your kind of statement? It's not enough, or I wasn't enough, or it was a lot,
yeah,
but I didn't. There
wasn't
was just
enough for you.
Yeah, it wasn't enough for you. So I would play with that statement. I would post that somewhere where I can see it loud and clear every day.
Okay.
So that I can relate to it and be like, is this true? It wasn't enough. I'd do Byron Katie's method on it if you want. I would do what I'm talking about with it. I would demartini that shit. I would be all over that until I felt like from inside my heart and my being, I could say it was enough. And then I would burn that piece of paper.
See, I think there's two things going on here. From my point of view, I'm hearing what you're saying, that it was enough. It's like, I go back to the war and the rape and the war and the love. I know it was enough, but I'm getting his world. For him, it wasn't enough. It's like, I'm holding both here. I couldn't have done anything different. There was nothing.
Okay, I hear you, Becky. And a minute ago, when you got emotional, you were invested in the story.
Yeah.
So you're doing both. You're intellectualizing it and saying, I get it, but you're not totally getting it inside of you. So I just want to challenge you a little bit that there's more work to do inside of you.
Got it.
And you'll know, and your son will know when that moment happens. There'll be a genuine shift that you can't fake this stuff because the patterns just keep going. So it's really great because it's really trustworthy system, the way this divine thing works.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so just keep at it, and I appreciate all that you're doing, and even validating and getting his world. Like, hey, I hear you, honey. Like, and then inside myself, I'm saying, and I rocked it, and it's enough for me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be defending myself. I would just be confidently, quietly, and calmly resting and abiding in, I did everything I could, and I'm complete there in myself.
Right.
So if you die, like, you know, if you were got in a bad accident and you were in the hospital, this is immediately the place your mind would go. I didn't do enough. This is where parents go, right? And they're like, shit, I should have or I could have. But the person who's not afraid to die is like, no, I'm complete. I rocked it. I jammed that thing.
I'll listen to this part again. I'm still holding right now that I'm doing the, you know, the fear and the love, I'm holding both. I'm getting his world, and at the same time, I'm honoring mine, that I did do enough. But from his point of view, I didn't. From mine, I did. And they both can coexist. And I will do what you said.
Yeah, they
check
it out. Okay, cool. They can totally coexist. I'm just saying, I think you have a little bit left in you until you're really saying that with complete, total self-love and honoring.
I think that there's a little guilt and shame. There's like a little ember left.
Okay, well, get to it. Get to it.
Yeah. Okay, but the man, what is the language? just the what the fuck are you doing when you need to say that to your partner or your kid or your whatever, when they're, he's really crossing lines, like, all over.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would just be myself, you know, and sometimes I might have to throw a tantrum.
Yeah.
But if I've thrown a lot of tantrums in the past, it's going to be just noise, like Charlie Brown in the phone.
Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah. But if I, it, if my anger doesn't come out much, it's going to go in. I remember one time my dad just, he just screamed and shamed the shit out of me in like middle school because I was being a total brat. And it worked. He was right. And he was onto me. And I was being a total spoiled little brat. And he just like blasted me. And I'm grateful. And someone else would have called that abusive as hell. But it worked. It was effective.
You're saying keep the anger in or let it out?
Well, I'm saying if you're an anger, if you've let it out a lot, that probably isn't going to work for you. If you never let it out, that will work for you.
Okay.
Yeah, and I can't give you a script there, unfortunately, but I can, you know, certainly model examples. And if I had more time and I knew your dynamic a little more and him a little more, I might be like, oh, this is what's going to work with him.
What are the, I know we're running out of time, what are the pieces so that I can work on that? Because I can't even say this to him yet. There's not enough foundation there.
What are the pieces? What do you mean?
You said if you knew a little more of the situation and the pieces.
Yeah, of your son. Just what he's like, his temperament. See, the thing with like tough love, if a kid already, he probably, my guess is he already feels ashamed deep down inside. And so shaming someone who already feels a deep amount of shame doesn't typically work.
Right.
So I don't recommend shaming someone.
Right.
In the case of my dad in eighth grade, I was feeling a little bit of shame, but I wasn't like bathing in shame every day.
Right.
I was a spoiled brat. I was living a pretty good life.
So if you're not going to shame somebody, but you want to confront them, and you're clearly overstepping your bounds because it's not my life, it's his, what do you use?
Well, sometimes you use silence, like, I'm not going to speak to you. It's too hard for me to watch you do this, and I'm going to take a break from our relationship for a while. I love you, and I'm going to take a break from our relationship for a little while. I won't be returning your phone calls. I won't be returning your texts. I won't be returning your emails. If you need something, please don't call me. I'm taking a break. Well, silence is, that's actually you loving yourself.
Right.
Right? That's just you saying, this is actually me taking care of myself here. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to pause there because I'm going to see if we can get to one more question, Becky.
Okay.
Cool. Good to chat.
Yep.
All right, was there one more question someone had? Advice on meditation. I've been doing silent meditation in the hurt kid. It seemed to have helped. I'm more calm. Am I on track? It's super hard for me to meditate, especially the silent one. It's probably the hardest thing I do all day. Yeah, it's meditation. You know, everybody talks about mindfulness being so awesome, and even meditation and the brain research is like incredible about how meditation helps us. So no brainer, meditation. Like if you're not doing meditation, like it's got to be incorporated in your life at some point because it's just nothing but beneficial. However, in the beginning, it's very challenging. It's really hard for us to be with our experience and to sit still and sit in silence. It just is. And that's why most people don't last with meditation, because it's a lot to just be with ourselves. So any advice? I would experiment. I would do meditate one way for a week. The next week, try a different way. The next week, try a different way. Go to dharmaocean.org and listen to Reggie Ray's guided meditations. He was my teacher for a long time, and he has these amazing meditations where you lie down and he guides you through your body from your toes to your head and back down. You breathe into the earth. He has amazing instruction that's mostly lying down meditation, and then you sit up. So I would try guided meditations of his. He's about the only person I recommend in terms of instruction. because it's so inclusive and so awesome, and it's not this like big sit still and don't think, you know, it's not rigid. And next I would try music, some Natam Kaur or some, you know, Krishna Das or some music that sounds woo-woo and spiritual and awesome, or some earth music. Those kind of things can really get into the body and into the penetrate the heart. You also, just sappy love songs, if that's what gets you, you could listen to a couple of those while you're meditating. And if you start tearing up, that's a good sign that you're meditating. Okay, we want to remember that part of the meditation instruction in this community isn't around enlightenment. It's not around no thoughts. It's not around following your breath. It's going into your, into the fire of your experience of what's being triggered. And if you're guarded around your husband all the time, let's say, meditation and feeling your heart again and feeling yourself soften is really beneficial, because you don't want to be a hardened woman around your dude all the time. That's just not attractive to be around. So meditation can soften your heart if you can be with yourself, and the reparenting yourself and the hurt kid meditation and things like that. Cool. So hopefully that's, those are some hints. Okay. So we're going to wrap it up. I'm just kind of reading some comments. You got it, Nora. Please clarify if meditation is clearing the mind. I think I just went over that, but I'll say it again. We're not trying to clear our mind. We're trying to use our thoughts to put logs on the fire, just to feel our experience so that we can ride the wave and complete the wave. We ride the wave and it's really intense, and then it comes down, right? And that trigger or that anger wave is over. But we have to actually get on the board, stay on the board, and ride the wave into the shore, and then it's done. In our body, right? Okay, guys, the teacher I said again was dharmaocean.org, D-H-A-R-M-A, dharmaocean.org, and Reggie Ray. Reggie Ray is the teacher, and he has amazing guided meditations. And he still does retreats here in Colorado. He's a really incredible spiritual teacher, if you're into that kind of thing. But if nothing else, his meditations are quality. He's got some stuff on Sounds True websites, on their website also. It's a publishing kind of, they do a lot of cool MP3s and stuff. All right. Great. I'm going to post this recording probably today or tomorrow. And, if you want to listen to it again, and really cool to reconnect. I'm like, oh, Roots community, where are these people? Like, so it feels nice to touch in with you guys again, and I look forward to next month. I like how you guys are interacting in the community. And, you know, if you have specific requests, certainly shoot them over. And we'll talk soon. Okay. Bye, everybody.